communicating is something that's surface level.
Mm-hmm.
We're communicating. Here's the words. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, go. See it. That's the message, right? But what you want is meaningful interaction. There's a quote in my book, and I could read it for you in a minute, but the idea is to shift from transaction to transformation. I could give you all kinds of data, but it's not going to transform you. It's not going to inspire you to do something different.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with David Tyler. My next guest is a media and communications coach passionate about helping people connect. He believes communication is the key to breaking down barriers, building relationships, and solving problems, whether at work, home, or in life. His mission is to inspire others to communicate with empathy, understanding, and respect while keeping it practical and actionable. He's also a sync music composer and a voice talent, most recognized as the network voice of CTV News in Canada and dozens of other brands worldwide. His name is David Tyler, and the topic of communications is a particularly important one, especially now. If you're looking for ways to make a deeper connection with the people around you, in business and your life, this is definitely a conversation you'll find extremely helpful. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com, where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available and what the newest audio chats will be about. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with David Tyler. Welcome, David. Thank you so much for joining me today. Really appreciate it. Great to see you.
Thanks for inviting me. We've been trying to set this thing up for a while.
We have, yeah. I'm looking forward to this because I'm really interested in your perspective on communication specifically, sure. But the voice and how it interacts with that communication and how we can better communicate through our voices is a really important topic, especially now when a lot of people are misconstruing things.
Yes.
Yeah.
See how I said that?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not saying yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah,
that's we'll different. We'll get there. But I want to start out by asking if you can tell me a story about an early memory of how sound moved you, because we talk about sound here. So,
yeah, we talked about this in the pre-interview, whenever that was, a few weeks ago, and it set off a whole bunch of, well, there was an immediate response that I had, but it set off a whole bunch of other things that my therapist will be very proud of, I think. But the earliest sound that I remember that was powerful was the sound of thunder.
Oh, okay.
And the thing about what I had to think about, because I had the time to think about it, was how does thunder make me feel? Thunder actually makes me feel safe. And this
Interesting.
Is and this is where it gets complicated.
Okay.
I'm Palestinian. I was born in Palestine. My family's from Jerusalem. And in 1967, my family and I lived through the Six-Day War, and all of this came back in the last few weeks. And our family, you know, we didn't have bomb shelters. We stayed in the hallway of the house. And what I remember distinctly then, not a happy sound, was the sound of a bomb coming in. You know, that high pitched whistle.
Yeah,
I can't do it, but that sound. And when the bomb landed somewhere else, boom, I went, oh, safe, right? So after we left, we stayed there for another year or so, but we moved to the United States, and my dad got a job teaching at the Hartford Seminary. My father was teaching at a seminary in the late 60s and the early 70s, if you can imagine how many draft dodgers there were at this seminary, it was a very interesting time, which we could talk about another time. But part of the job that my dad got as a professor, he had a PhD in literature, was they gave him a house.
Oh, nice.
So we had this old house. Think about this. It was probably built in the 1800s. It had holes in the walls. It wasn't in great shape. And today, if you Google Earth it, 73 Sherman Street in Hartford, Connecticut, it's a parking lot.
Oh.
They actually turned that house into a parking lot. But the beautiful thing about this house was, because it was so old, the windowsills were huge. And me as a, I don't know, 5, 6, 7-year-old kid, I could literally sit in the window. Because it was that wide. Wow. And when I heard a thunderstorm coming in, I would sit myself in the window. And as the storm was coming, the wind started pushing into the house. And as it was going, the wind would be gushing out. But I would hear that sound of thunder. And that is the answer to your question. That sound of thunder, you know, to me means safety. It's weird.
That's a powerful sound. Yeah, yeah, I can see the association. Sure. Yeah, why not? Yeah. Yeah, sound is one of those things that can definitely make us feel safe or unsafe. Sure. Or lots of other emotions, certainly.
It's a big emotion. But thunder is, even today, it's still a powerful sound, you know.
Yeah, definitely a powerful sound. Yes. Yeah. So you started working in sound. You've been a musician for a long time, correct? Mm-hmm. So when did you start doing music?
Well, I was about eight years old. I picked up my first instrument was the trumpet. The first song I learned was Sweet Caroline.
Okay.
Think early 70s, right? It was a hit song, and I was like eighth trumpet. Are you familiar with how, you know, orchestras work?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, of course you are.
So I was in one.
Right. So first trumpet.
French horn, actually.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
We were at a show last night, and the French horns are very good. Anyway, but I was like eighth trumpet, 8 years old.
Try doing that with braces. Yeah, that didn't last very long.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, my God.
No.
But in Connecticut, we won, I don't even know what it was, but we won a state championship for our band. I think I played three notes in that whole song. Ba, ba, ba.
Yeah.
Those are the three songs, the three notes that I played in that song.
Yeah.
But when I moved to Canada, I picked up the trombone. My goal was to learn as many instruments as I could. Went from trombone. I wanted to go to saxophone, but then guess what? I was like a teenage boy, and me and my friends, we wanted to start a band, and there was no trombone. So I picked up drums.
Okay.
But along that tract, I was learning music theory. I was learning composition. I was understanding. So I play piano, but I'm not a pianist. I think just about any musician plays piano, right? Once you take music theory and plunk it onto to a keyboard, and you know, in high school here in Montreal, I remember thinking, you know, well, maybe there's not, you know, such a great living playing music, even as a drummer. And we were,
that's a good assumption.
we were writing songs and stuff. And my music teacher at the time, Mr. Peterson, had these things on the wall. It says careers that you could do as a musician. And one of them was DJ.
Radio DJ,
right? So that's when I kind of started to think that maybe that would be a way to still use my love of music. But make a sort of living. I know that there's people that are listening to this now and saying, you were going to make a living in radio? Well, it was better than playing in clubs on Thursday,
certainly,
Friday, Saturday night. So,
and years ago, it was a lot easier to make a living at it than it is today.
and things weren't as expensive.
Yes, you know, that is a very good point.
And now when we've talked about this as voiceover talent, you know, do it for exposure. We can't pay you, but you do it for exposure.
Oh my God. Pay your mortgage with exposure bucks, why don't you?
So when I made that decision, that deviation, mm-hmm. still the love of music, it's still there. I was still playing in bands, and I went to Concordia University here in Montreal. mm-hmm. and got into their communications program, graduated from their communications program, and ran the university radio station. And then I got into radio. I was one of the lucky few who got to start in his hometown, because everybody told me, well, you're going to have to go to a small town somewhere. And I wasn't thrilled about doing that, but I was willing to, but I didn't have to.
Well, I'm glad you got to stay where you wanted to stay. And your radio career lasted for how long? What transitioned you into voiceover?
Well, I was doing voiceover before I was doing radio. So okay. While I was still here in Quebec, it's sort of a junior college, Cégep, right? Mm-hmm. So I was in the radio station at my Cégep. I think I was about 18 or 19 years old, something like that. And a lady walked in to the radio station and says, hey, I'm doing a video for the McGill Dentistry School. And it's a video for children to teach them how to take care of their teeth, right? And I'm looking for people to do voiceover. I was literally the only person in the station at the time. It was a small little place at John Abbott College. And I went, I could try. And I got paid $50, keeping in mind that at the time, minimum wage was $4 an hour.
Oh, okay.
So $50 for about, I think it was about 30 minutes of work was, mm-hmm. oh my God.
Sounded pretty good.
I could do this. Wait a second. But yeah, so I would love to see if there's a copy of this video. But in the video, I played Mr. Mouth. I was Mr. Mouth, and I did a character voice kind of like that. Look at this, kids. And that's how it started.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I got a commercial here, a commercial there, and eventually built it up. But then I got into radio. Mm-hmm. And then there was a lot more exposure to directors and producers and that kind of thing. So I got into radio in 87. I did my first voiceover in 1984 or 85. Okay. And I worked in radio full time till about 2008. And I did all of that here in Montreal at two radio stations.
Nice. Yeah.
So then it was just a matter of, you know, I have my studio already. I had all my equipment and everything. So it's just a matter of going from doing 50% to doing 100% in voiceover work.
And that takes time, definitely.
It didn't take me that long because I already had the infrastructure was already there.
Sure.
And I was already working for TV stations. I was already mm-hmm. working for radio stations too.
Are you looking for ways to improve your company's or podcast's impact? You'd be surprised how powerful the use of an intentional audio branding strategy can be. Want to know more? I have a free downloadable PDF that gives you my 5 tips for implementing an intentional audio strategy at voiceoversandvocals.com/audio-branding-strategy. That location does ask to put you on a mailing list, just to send you updates on when the new podcasts come out. But if you really don't want to give your email out, I understand. Just contact me directly. My email is all over my website, and I'll make sure you get that PDF without needing to sign up anywhere. If you do sign up, though, you also get access to a resources section called The Studio, where I have videos, white papers, and PDFs, discounts from my guests, and snippets of audio from my guests that no one else gets to hear. So maybe it's worth your while. Totally up to you. And of course, if you're looking for voiceovers, you can get in touch with me about that too. Now, back to the podcast.
So the voiceover and communications, and you have your degree in that, obviously, yeah. But you just came out with a book, right?
So I did.
Yeah. So the whole communications thing, I mean, there's a lot to talk about there.
There is.
Yes. Connect. Yes. Right. I love the book.
Right,
yeah. So
over there too.
Yes, the book is being presented on screen for those of you that will be listening to this. It's okay. called Connect. You ask about tone of voice, or, mm-hmm. or you talk about tone of voice. Mm-hmm. And I talk about branding here. I talk mm-hmm. about audio branding specifically. Right. So when we're marrying those two concepts,
yes,
how does the tone of voice impact how you perceive a brand?
This is very interesting. Now, I'm glad that you brought that up. When I started in voiceover, there was maybe 5% of the number of voiceover artists that there are now. And there's a number of reasons for that. I think that part of I think part of my success, we'll have to ask other people, but part of my success is the sound of my voice. And that is that it's unique and is now being used, yes, as a signature voice. So as soon as you hear my voice, let's talk for a minute as the brand voice for CTV News. And I've been the brand voice of CTV News now for, I think it's, is it 13 years now? It could be 14 years. So
congratulations,
my voice,
well, first of all, that's a good gig to have, and one that doesn't typically last that long. So congratulations.
Yeah. Actually, the last guy was 17 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Other brands, though, tend to not maybe stick with it for quite so long. So, yeah.
So CTV, you know, made a commitment to the brand. I know how it is in the U.S. because I do a lot of TV work in the United States, and you could you know, be gone after a year or two. I mean, just listen to what CNN is doing. I can't even count. I think there's about 20 different voices all at the same time. But CTV made a commitment to have one brand voice, and I'm glad that that they picked me for that. In the olden days, I don't want to sound like I'm too old, but in the old days, there were guys, fewer women. Now that I think about it, but there were people who were signature voices, and when you got that signature voice to be the voice of your brand, it was a major coup. And I want to you're a lot younger than I am, but if you think back to the 1980s,
but okay,
I was thinking about this, and there still is a jam brand called Smuckers.
Oh yes,
they like to present their brand as homey and old-fashioned. Mm-hmm. And through the 80s, until he passed away, Mason Adams was the voice of Smuckers. And he had a sort of a lisp that he would talk like this. Come down to Smuckers. It's just one of those old-timey kind of things.
Yep.
I sound like Adam Sandler, don't I?
It's pretty good, but keep going.
So Mason Adams was the brand voice of Smuckers for I don't know how long. 80s, maybe even the early 90s. I think he passed away like in 92 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But it was important for the brand to keep Mason there, to keep Mason happy and to keep him coming back. And he was retired from acting even, because he did on camera TV and film too. And another example is Canadian actor Tom Sharp, the bald guy that did all the Goodyear commercials.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And it wasn't just the character of his voice, but mm-hmm. the kind of character that he performed. I found this interesting quote from Tom Sharp, because we always call him, you know, the bald guy, right? And he said, I don't consider myself bald. I'm simply taller than my hair.
Okay. That's a very optimistic way to look at it. I'm appreciative. Yes.
But there's two examples of a brand voice being used long term for a brand. And I think the Mason Adams stuff, I don't think he ever appeared on camera for the commercials. Mm. But Tom Sharp was on camera and walking around with the tires. And then my final example of a brand voice, how the sound affects the way that people perceive a brand, is James Earl Jones.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, James Earl Jones, you cannot not recognize his voice. I mean, when CNN came on air, he was one of the original voices. This is CNN. That's all he had to say. And then, of course, you know, voice acting as the voice of Darth Vader. When you think of Darth Vader, the brand of Darth Vader, what do you think of? Do you think of the actor that was in it? In the suit? I can't even remember. I don't even remember his name. But you remember James Earl Jones' performance of that. That's kind of, in that sense, I guess I'm kind of old school. And I like CTV, I get used in that way as well. Here in Canada, I was the voice of Subaru radio commercials for about 13 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Benjamin Moore paints, I think it was 9 or 10 years. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of that, I mean, as a voice actor, is that I know, you know, once a month there's going to be a new set of commercials that are coming in. So it's good for me. And of course, it's all union work, so I'm paid very well. But there's several brands like that that I'm used for in Canada as a brand voice. When you hear James Earl Jones on the TV in the other room, you know, oh, that TV's on CNN.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Or if you hear Mason Adams' voice, you don't even need to know what he's talking about because you know, oh, it's a Smucker's ad. Mm-hmm. And the same thing goes for Tom Sharpe. I think it's important for brands to invest in their brand voice. Find a voice that's distinct enough and not average, you know.
Isn't it more than distinction, though? I mean, you want a brand voice that fits who your brand is, obviously.
Well, sure. So, I'm not going to be selling ballerina outfits.
Well, exactly.
You know,
yeah.
I would be selling trucks or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we talk about brand perception, we're talking about how well do you know your brand?
Right.
You know, and does the voice that you're using reflect that brand?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, ways to.
But Jody, it's not just about, you know, the timbre of the voice. There's also the performance of the voice too. I mean, and James Earl Jones was great to be able to do what he did, and he could use that same voice in different aspects. One of the things that I teach the voice talent that I work with, and now what I teach the corporate customers that I have. Who are preparing for speeches and things like that. I talk about the seven colors of the voice, and I teach them these are the brushes. I don't know. Can you see it? No. Okay.
Yeah, it's out of the camera there.
I have a thing here behind me. Anyway, but what do you call it? It's a painter's palette.
Okay.
And on it, I have, this is how I do the physical thing. And on it, there's seven different colors. And then I go through the different colors to explain each of them. I think most voice teachers only teach four, but I teach seven. And I'll go through them quick. Okay. These are the colors of the voice. Pitch, pace, prosody, timbre, and tone, which are often confused together, timbre and tone, volume, and the best one is silence.
I know we're all super busy and pulled in so many different directions these days, so I wanted to take a moment to celebrate and thank the people who have taken the time to review this podcast. Playin' Games writes, "Great show. Jody has a terrific voice and great podcast. The content is meaningful and substantive for serious podcasters, folks interested in audio, and anyone interested in learning how audio, sound, can enhance their brand. Well done, Jody." And thank you, Playin' Games, for your fabulous review. I so appreciate that you took the time to do that and that you're enjoying what we do here. And now, back to the show.
When you learn how to use these seven colors, along with the words that you're saying, that's what makes you malleable as a brand for just about any product.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can certainly see how that would work very well. Yeah. And voice people all around would get a lot of use from understanding the different shades of what you're describing there. I think that's a very good way to
describe
it.
The different colors.
Well, different colors. Yes. Pardon me. Shades, colors. Yes. Okay. So audio branding, when we're talking about how the voice is a part of that, it influences the subconscious, right?
Mm-hmm. I would think so.
Yeah. So in communication, when you're talking about that being communicated in a brand, what would you instruct a brand to think about and a voice talent to think about?
Well, I would, because you and I were both musicians, right?
Mm-hmm.
I could play a chord for you and you could say whether it's major or minor.
Sure.
How?
Kind of how it makes me feel, honestly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
How does it make you feel? Mm-hmm. And I could speak in a very stern voice and make you feel like you're under threat of some kind because I'm speaking a little more staccato and because I'm being a little more aggressive in the way that I'm speaking. Or I can speak, you know, very softly and like a candlelit dinner kind of a thing. The way that you speak affects the emotions. There's a, the whole, I'm not a scientist, but I pretend to be one sometimes. Psychoacoustics is an amazing study of the way that sound affects us emotionally. We know, I mean, from a sales perspective, we know that people buy on emotion, but justify using logic, right? So as a brand, if you're trying to sell your brand, if it's a product or whatever, or an idea, you you want to tap into the emotional side. One of the old day things, can I give you a little old day anecdote?
Please
When I was working in radio, and I did midday show, I did afternoon drive show. But when I was working in radio, part of the job after I would do my show, or sometimes before, but after I would do my show, I would go into the production studio. And there in the production studio, we had a production studio manager, and he had a stack of commercials for me to read that had come in during the day from the sales department. So sometimes I'd be reading between 10 and 15 commercials, usually in the space of about 30 minutes. But and this was before computers. We did this when computers came out too, but I prefer using the visual of the four-track reel-to-reel recorder.
Oh, yes, I remember those days. Yes.
So he would already have all the music tracked. All the music was already laid down, and I had was given the script, and I had 30 seconds or 29.5 seconds to read the copy with the music in my ear, right? And what I learned, because I guess it's because of my musical background, my ear training, is that the music would change my read.
Oh, totally.
It would change it rhythmically, and it would change it melodically. If it was a happy song, guess what? You know, I would be speaking in happier tones. And I mean, you have to really sit down and analyze those commercials, but I was probably speaking in the key of the song too.
Yep.
But then, you know, digital recording came on, and most of the commercials and things that I do now, I do without hearing the music. I just record it, my voice, and I send it off to my client. I would like to see a return to, let me hear the music. Because
I ask my clients all the time. Yes. Yeah. Because I tell them we can get to the tone we need immediately from hearing the music.
Yeah. Just dial it right in. Yeah. You have a musical ear. You have a musical background. So that's easy. It's easy to do. Not everybody does, though.
Yeah.
But I really do think that it's helpful. And as a drummer, I understand timing. I know the difference between 30 seconds and 15 seconds and 7 seconds and 10 and 5. And it's second nature for me.
Yeah. And the timing is very important because, like you were saying, you sound sometimes more urgent or angry, maybe, if you're staccato. So it you know, there's a lot to do with the timing and the beats and the notes of a script.
Yeah. But oftentimes, I mean, as a coach, it's important to point out, as I said, the seven colors of the voice to say these things are very important. I actually believe that silences are probably, you know, one of the most important colors, the actual silence, because Nick Michaels, he's a friend of mine. He's from Montreal. He was living in Miami. He's passed away. He's spent a lot of time in radio. And he said, if you're reading a commercial and they don't leave space for the listener to hear and understand what you're saying, your audience becomes a victim of your message and doesn't participate in that message.
That is a really good point. Yeah.
I've had several commercials where, you know, it starts off with, do you have toe fungus? I always use that example. It's horrible. But you need to leave that, when, especially a commercial that starts with a question, you need to leave that space for the audience to go, well, actually, yeah, I do. You need to give them that moment to participate in the commercial message. And even if it's not, even if we're not talking about voiceover in commercial, we're talking about voiceover in a corporate video. You need to give space for the audience to participate and to connect with your message.
Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, it would really help me out if you'd give it a review. The best place to do that in written format is at the bottom of the audiobrandingpodcast.com page. And if you want to do that in voice format, there's a link in the ending paragraph at the top of that same page. I would so appreciate that. It helps me to know what you'd like to hear more of and why you're listening in the first place. As podcasters, we rarely know who's actually listening, so it helps me to know that I'm not just speaking into the void. Thanks for that. And now, back to the show.
Actually, that gets me to your mantra. So you say stop communicating and start connecting, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So is that what you mean, what you just said?
Yeah, I mean, communicating is something that's surface level. Mm-hmm. We're communicating. Here's the words. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, go. See it. That's the message, right? But what you want is meaningful interaction. There's a quote in my book, and I could read it for you in a minute, but the idea is to shift from transaction to transformation. I could give you all kinds of data, but it's not going to transform you. It's not going to inspire you to do something different.
It won't make you feel anything.
Right. It's about emotional connection over informational exchange.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, can I read it?
By all means, go ahead.
This is something from page 9. It's not a big book. It's 112 pages long.
Okay.
I'm just going to read this one. It's very short.
Go ahead.
True communication isn't just about transferring information, it's about transformation. Every conversation holds the potential to change perspectives, inspire action, or deepen a relationship. Approach each interaction with this in mind, and you'll find that effective communication isn't just a skill, but a powerful force for positive change.
I love it. Yeah, that's
It's about transformation. And I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, Mitch Joel. You may know him. He's a Montrealer. He's got a couple of books out, big on marketing, talks on the TV and radio a lot. And we were having this discussion about scripts or reading a script, right? A non-professional, a non-voice person won't read a script the same way that you and I will. And I was explaining to him how I teach my voiceover students the difference. When you read the script, understand what it is. Maybe you're going to get a briefing from the producer saying, this is what it is. This is what we're trying to sell. And there's a whole process that I take them through. If you could take a 30-second script and distill it down into 7 or 8 words at the most, what is that? And that's the point of the script. Then read the script and understand the script. And then at one point, you transcend the written words. You transcend it as a performer. It's there. Like when you're performing in a band and you've got a sheet of music, you don't sit and read the notes as you're playing. You transcend it. And you can hear when a band transcends the written notes on the page. And the same thing goes for voiceover people. Being able to take that, internalize it, add your own personal history to it or your own uniqueness to it, and transcend the script and perform it. That's how you become, transformative.
Yeah. A better communicator.
A better communicator, yes.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time,